We're going to start. Please call the roll. You two denied, remember? It was by default. Here. Thank you. First item up on the agenda would be the report of the chief.
I think no report. I made them yesterday, and the three of you were here, so.
The translation of that was he said it yesterday.
Yeah.
All right. Is there a communications school at SC? Speaking of which, the next report's from our chief communications officer. Yes, I'm sorry.
What's that?
Wait. Arnold, what? He's not committing me. That's my recollection, but everyone can do it in their own heart, in their own mind, and in their own way. How's that? It's very, very libertarian approach. All right, Chief Communications Officer report.
All right, good morning. Oh, could you switch the screen, please? Thanks. Just to give you a quick update on communications, one thing that's actually pretty major is we just improved our trip planning system on our website. We focused on the interface. That's been one of the continual comments we've received over the years in terms of making it as user-friendly as possible. So we are definitely moving in that direction. We've also incorporated Google Maps, which is a pretty common platform. And we are working on getting live chat coming to people while they are doing a trip plan so we can actually have our customer service agents assist in using the system while they're online, which is something that's common in other industries and we're trying to bring into transportation. We've launched a new ridership campaign. It's just the initial phase. It's just on the side of our vehicles right now. And we're trying to focus on the features and benefits of transportation, the comparisons to gas prices as well as traffic. We continue to market our destinations. These are just two of the posters that are out there, but this has been a pretty effective campaign because it not only showcases places we serve, but it gets our customers, it cross-promotes other services within our system to our existing customer base. We continue to market our capital projects through our In the Works program, focusing both on the Accelerated Highway program as well as the 3010 initiatives. And we keep this out continually, trying to keep the awareness high of all the things that are taking place or planning on taking place. Our work installations continue on the Expo line. This is just some photographs of Willie Middlebrook's work that will be out on the system eventually when we open it, but that is something that's moving forward. One of the things, too, we're focusing on is working a lot closer with Exposition Park. With the opening of the Expo line, there's going to be a lot of opportunities to increase ridership, form partnerships, and do joint promotions, and also even opportunities for event sales and pre-event sales with the large crowds that hit the Coliseum as well as Expo Park or Exposition Park, all the different museums and everything that are out there. So we've already began preliminary meetings with them, and we're going to meet with them more in January. Along with that, there's also logistics issues that we're looking at today, too, in terms of crowd management and trade movements, so that we have the most optimal system as we expand Expo into that area. So we are trying to work very closely and pre-plan in terms of opportunities as well as making sure it runs as smoothly as possible. And just one other thing, we continue to receive awards and recognition. So this is just a list of the awards that Communications and Design has received recently, and as well as community outreach. And that concludes my presentation, and be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions from any of the members of the committee? All right, Matt, thank you very much. If there's no questions or comments, we will keep moving forward to item 3 on the agenda, which is a federal and state affairs update. And since there's nothing happening in Washington or Sacramento, this ought to be brief. No.
Good morning, members of the subcommittee. I am Rafi. I'm praying here to deliver the federal affairs update. To say the results of the November 2nd election will have an impact on transportation matters would be an understatement. There's any number of issues that we care about that are going to be facing a markedly changed environment in Washington, D.C. I'll start off, number one, with the fact that it's very likely that in the annual spending bills there will no longer be transportation earmarks. That's number one. Number two, it is apparent that there will likely no longer be high priority projects that members may submit in the surface transportation bill, which is going to be the bill that's going to be a successor to Safety Lou. It's also apparent that the idea of increasing the gas tax, which is something that would have brought solvency to the Highway Trust Fund, is off the table. And so at best, you'll see level funding in that bill. It's also clear that among House and Senate leaders, there's an additional appetite for increased and vigorous oversight over monies that are being parsed out by the executive branch, and specifically ARRA funds, most recently those funds that were dispersed through the Tiger II program. We should expect, especially in the House, under the leadership of the incoming chair of the Transportation Infrastructure Committee, John Mica, additional scrutiny on that score. And the last item, an item of note for us, because we care about the authorization bill so much, is that it appears that the House and the Senate are driving towards a goal of a six-month extension of Safety Lou. That legislation has been kicked down the can since it expired in September of 2009. The idea here among the Senate and House leaders is that if they can't adopt a bill by July of 2011, they're just going to give up, and you won't have a surface transportation bill until after the 2012 elections. As for other matters, the lame duck may not be so lame after all. There's a number of big issues that may be addressed in the Senate. There's the START Treaty. There's also issues related to Don't Ask, Don't Tell. There's a DREAM Act related to the way our country manages its immigration laws. There's also an appetite to embrace a continuing resolution. The bill that currently funds the federal government expires on December 3rd. And so I don't think on either side of the aisle there's an appetite for a government shutdown that we saw during the Clinton administration. So what you'll likely see is an extension for either several months or a full year extension. So what that would mean for us is that in fiscal year 2011, you would not have a regular appropriations bill. You would have a continuing resolution based on fiscal year 2010 numbers. Most recently, Senator Dianne Feinstein and Barbara Boxer issued a letter that I'd be happy to share with the members of the board, and that letter related to high-speed rail funds. After the November 2nd elections, a number of governors, especially those from the Midwest, have announced that they're not going to be accepting the high-speed rail funds that had been apportioned to them through the Recovery Act, aka ARRA. Specifically, John Kasich of Ohio said that he doesn't want anything to do with the $400 million in high-speed rail funds that was given to his state. And Governor Scott Walker, he's the new governor from Wisconsin, he wants nothing to do with the $800 million that was given to his state for a line linking Milwaukee and Madison, Wisconsin. And those are big and important developments, and I think the senator's letter is going to be taken seriously by Secretary LaHood. One last matter that I wanted to bring to the board's attention is the project in New Jersey, known as the ARC project. Last month, the governor of New Jersey, Chris Christie, said that the state did not have the finances to partake in that project, and told the federal government that the agreement, the tentative agreement they had for $3 billion federal share, was no longer needed because the project was dead. That project was slated to get $200 million in the fiscal year 2011 bill. It's unclear how the federal government is going to handle that matter. Secretary LaHood is now considering how to handle the issue, specifically with the $200 million that was slated to be in the fiscal year 2011 bill. Because there is no bill itself, that money technically doesn't exist. So one of two big things could happen. One, those in charge of the House and Senate could take that money out of the spending bill. And so instead of having $2 billion for new starts for next year, you could have $1.8 billion. Or two, that money could be redirected to projects elsewhere in the United States. And it's something that we're, A, carefully watching, and B, carefully engaged with the U.S. Department of Transportation on. And last, I wanted to share with the board that we continue to engage policymakers on our 3010 program and our Accelerated Highway program. Most recently, this week, I was in Washington, D.C. and met with incoming Chairman Micah's staff to discuss our 3010 proposal and our Accelerated Highway plan. I think the dynamic which is going to be playing out in Washington is one of limited resources, and in that environment, our plan, whether it's with P3 on highways, whether it's bonding with respect to transit and highway programs, our proposals are going to be very well received. And if we convey our message and have a content-rich and thoughtful proposal, which I believe we do, I think we may paradoxically secure a great measure of success in the 112th Congress. And with that, that concludes my remarks. I'd be happy to answer any and all questions.
Mr. Chairman,
could you comment, please, a little bit on what happens to the dynamic back there if earmarks go away completely, but the program remains in place?
Yeah, it's a good question. You enter into a policy area where formulas are king. And so, for example, this agency benefits from a number of federal formulas, like the CMAQ program and a number of others. We also face formulas that don't treat our agency particularly well, like the Rail Modernization Program. And so what the message that the incoming House leaders and the minority in the Senate is sending is that We're not going to be involved in issues related to specific powers of the purse on this project or that project, but we are going to be funneling that money into formulas. And that's going to be fascinating as it plays out. I mean, one conversation this Tuesday was with the incoming majority staff in the House, and they said, we do not know how the Republican caucus is going to treat New Starts projects. Will they view a New Starts project as an earmark? And I quite frankly hadn't thought about that, because I wouldn't know how you would fund a rail program without citing it in a particular spending bill. And so I don't know what the Republican caucus has in mind when they say that, you know, they might view a New Starts project as an earmark. Would they cede that authority entirely to the executive branch? How that would work, I don't know. And I don't think the majority staff, the incoming majority staff, knows either. I think this is an issue that when the caucus, now that they finished their leadership elections yesterday, are going to be getting their hands around and trying to get a hold of.
There's also an issue, though, if it's formula-based and comes to the state of California, that's going to raise a set of issues as well.
I think that makes Michael Turner's job a little more important.
Well, especially given the state of affairs. We have some work to do.
No questions. Ara?
Thank you. Just an observation. I mean, this whole shift in the House majority, I think, was rather, although many predicted it, is rather stunning. And my only problem is I am concerned about the viability of our 3010 plan. 3010, if you recall, came to the board unanimously. There certainly were no partisan politics played. We all came together, left and right, north and south, and sought and created a vision that was presented by Mayor Villaraigosa, as well as the other individual projects that comprise that 3010 plan. I felt very uneasy, I've got to tell you, being a registered Republican in the last month or so of the campaign, because the 3010 rallies often turned out to be what I saw as support solely for Democratic candidates. I very much wanted to attend some of those rallies. But when I looked at the scorecard and the speaking card, it was clear to me that, you know, someone with an R next to their name, and I'm just on a low-level city official, essentially, would feel out of place. I think we need to recharacterize that that 3010 concept and rejuvenate it with the spirit of a bipartisanship and nonpartisanship at which it was created. We need to transfer some of those warm relationships that we've had with the Democratic majority previously to the new Republican leaders. And I think it's essential that the 3010 plan not be seen as only an idea conceived by a blue state in a blue county, by a blue city, by a very dynamic Democratic leader, Mayor Villaraigosa. So I think we need to come back together and hold hands, and when we promote 3010, bring some of our Republican colleagues on the board, and which we always have been, essentially. When I was in chair and went to Washington, it was always I was right there, arm in arm with Director Katz and
our arm three,
Waxman's office, and you know, everyone else that was in a position of leadership. So I think it's essential that we reaffirm and recommit the concept of 3010 being a regional solution, and peel away some of the partisanship that may have glommed onto it in the last 60 days leading up to the very dynamic and energetic campaign period.
Rafi, let me respond to that, if you don't mind. Director Najarian, you know, I think that this was always viewed, transportation, at least going through the 10 years I chaired the committee in SAC, has always been more geographic than partisan. Urban, rural, north, south, east, west, much more so than Democrat and Republican. And I agree with you, that is how it should be. You know, unfortunately, other than yourself, you know, the Republicans on this board opposed Measure R and 3010. And it was a long time before we got that unanimous vote that you were critical in bringing people together to get. And I think that, you know, I understand what you're saying. I think the other reality, it's just the business we're in. Senator Boxer, who was in a tough campaign, is our number one champion, you know, and, you know, if that stuff happens. I understand what you're saying, though. I mean, at that point, Vice Chair, or I guess Ranking Republican Micah, 3 weeks before the election. The first trip to D.C., just so you know, I met with Kevin McCarthy, who's now apparently going to be the number third Republican in the House, who's an old colleague from Sacramento. And long before Democrats and Republicans in L.A. County thought 3010 was a good idea, Kevin saw some value in it. So I agree with you completely, and I think we need to make sure, as we've said, in the same way, we've said, you know, 3010 is an L.A. brand. But this is a national program that could work in any city or any state in this country. And I think that's partially why when Mayor Villaraigosa went back, Senator Imhoff was very supportive of expanding TIFIA, Ranking Republican on Senator Boxer's campaign. But we have a lot of work to do, and I agree with you on that. We do have a lot of work. And as we all know, and I think it's you know, it's one reason why when we were talking about federal lobbyists and things, I asked for that contract not to be 2 years but 6 months, and then with the option so we can evaluate here what might happen. Remember, we all did it because of what might happen in November, just knowing that it's a different world. And I agree with you. And I'm happy to have you go back and I can stay home. That is great from my perspective in terms of lobbying for 3010. And I think that, you know, with your colleagues on the Republican side, I'll look to you for direction.
I thought we were a team, Richard.
I'll go with you.
First of all, this issue has never been partisan. It is always been a nonpartisan issue. We took great pains to visit both Democratic and Republican leaders. But I think we got to be absolutely clear that with the change in leadership, we need to work even more closely with leaders in the House on the relevant committees, much as we did when there was Democratic leadership there. My hope is they'll be able to convince people that infrastructure investment with a $2.2 trillion need, according to the American Society of Civil Engineers, transportation alone a $546 billion need, and we're talking about in the next 5 years. At a time of historic deficits and debt, this is a template for transportation infrastructure investment, because what we say is we're putting up our own money. That ought to appeal to both Republicans and Democrats, and it's certainly why I have met and will continue to meet with both sides of the aisle. I will say this, though, you know, let's be clear. Those rallies for Senator Boxer had everything to do with she's been the champion, and she will continue to chair that committee. And, you know, when the champion for something as important as this, who delivered $546 million, you're darn right some people are going to want to extol her virtues and support her her candidacy. But it is not lost on any of us that this is an issue that from the very beginning has to be bipartisan. The issue as it exists is actually a nonpartisan issue. And our hope is that we'll be able to get that support across the board. It will not be easy. I think we've always understood. And I said this the other day, when we got the down payment on the 3010 initiative, that this is a down payment and this is a great day for celebration, but we're a long way off from convincing the powers that be, notwithstanding that, you know, Brookings says this is a template, that Build America's Future says this is a template, that virtually everybody that's looked at this says this is what we ought to do. This should not be partisan. You know, the hope is that we'll be able to convince them, and certainly look forward to work with you in that vein. Any other questions, comments regarding this issue? Thank you very much. And obviously, we've got our work cut out for us. There are a lot of priorities here. And, you know, I think I want to just say that all of the board is ready, willing, and able. And I think the key that I said 2 weeks ago, with our success with 3010, with Measure R, with the long-range plan, with identifying our two federal priorities, is that we're now working together in a way that we haven't always done in the past. So the key to the success of everything we do is consensus here on the board and staff moving aggressively ahead to vindicate our stated priorities. So, yes, Art?
I should like to report to you that, or maybe remind the committee that our current contract with the umbrella lobbying firm Manat, which is a 6-month contract, expires at the end of February. Our plan is to come back to the committee and to the board in January with an assessment of how things are working, and recommend at that time a path forward with that contract one way or the other. So that'll come up next month. I'm sorry, January.
Mr. Mayor, I totally agree with your remarks, and I think we need to continue to move forward as a board, as a county, and a region to make that 3010 plan a reality. So I'm with you, and my commitment remains firm.
Yes.
State report.
the state report now.
Yeah, can we have the state report sure. now?
Good morning, members of the committee. This morning I'd like to update you primarily on the impacts of the November election on our state legislative program. But before I begin, I'd like to express our thanks to the California Transportation Commission for their approval of a series of measures related to the replacement of the Gerald Desmond Bridge. At their last meeting, the CTC took action on a number of measures, not the least of which was an allocation of additional funding for that project. This now allows the Port of Long Beach to move forward on replacing the Gerald Desmond Bridge, which is an important link in our highway and goods movement system. I'd especially like to thank Chairman Kanabe and Mayor Villaraigosa for their assistance in communicating with the Commission about the importance of the Gerald Desmond Bridge to our region. With respect to the election itself, we obviously have a new governor in Jerry Brown, but we begin this year's legislative session with a $26 billion deficit. The governor-elect has made very strong statements in relation to infrastructure investment and continuing with the goals of AB 32 and SB 375, and we are hopeful that the combination of these two areas of emphasis bode well for the future of public transit in California. The word of the day, however, with respect to this year's budget process may well be paradox. With the passage of Proposition 25, the legislature may now pass the budget with a majority vote. However, the passages of both Propositions 22 and 26 restrict the ability of the legislature to use certain local funds and to raise fees to balance the budget. An additional paradox is seen in a poll conducted by the Los Angeles Times and USC. This poll, which reflects similar polls conducted in the past, shows that the public wants the budget passed through cuts, but they object to most of the cuts that would be needed in order to balance the budget that way. Another dynamic in the budget process is the challenge in that the changeover in the House has reduced the expectation of federal funds upon which the current budget was balanced. One of the key issues with respect to the election, as I mentioned, was that both Proposition 22 and 26 were approved by the voters. Proposition 22, which was sponsored by the California Alliance for Jobs, California League of Cities, and the California Transit Association, protects certain revenues allocated to local government. Proposition 26, which was sponsored by the California Chamber of Commerce and various business interests in the state, changes the definition of a fee versus a tax, which triggers a requirement that new fees, which are now classified as taxes, would have to be approved by a two-thirds vote. In addition to these provisions, both measures included retroactivity clauses, which could invalidate any measure approved by the legislature in the previous session that is counter to either of the two initiatives. While both measures have similar clauses, the retroactivity clause in Proposition 26 is much stronger. What is at risk now is the gas tax sales tax swap that was approved by the legislature this year. Since the election, a number of legislative staff, transportation advocates, and lawyers have been digesting the impacts of the retroactivity clauses, primarily the one found in Proposition 26. A number of interpretations are possible, ranging from no impact at all, unless litigation is brought against the state, to one interpretation that the state must now revert to the Proposition 42 requirements, which would require the reimposition of the sales tax on gas with its corresponding allocations various transportation uses. It should be noted that the gas tax sales tax swap package also included the retention of the sales tax on diesel, which will provide significant funding for public transit operations in California. Essentially, it's too early to tell at this point what the impact of the propositions will be, and staff are of the opinion that it's now a very good time to work with our partners in both the legislature and the incoming administration to move forward in a constructive manner. The fact that we now have a new governor and the fact that this year's budget will present yet another challenge in Sacramento, we feel is an opportunity, like I mentioned, for the community to partner with our friends and try and solve this problem. And that will probably be a dominating issue in this year's budget. Mr. Chairman and members, that concludes my report.
Any questions? Hearing none, thank you very much. Item number 16. Mm-hmm. Introduce a motion, the talking point. I'm introducing a motion that I think is a win-win for the Metropolitan Transit Authority, for schools, students, and teachers. I don't have to tell everybody what a tough time we're in, economically speaking, shrinking budgets in our schools, transportation costs for field trips dramatically reduced or eliminated. And I think we have an obligation to our kids to help them learn, and importantly to see what we can do to address these recent cutbacks. And this is particularly true for low-income and students. Now, during our non-peak hours, we have a lot of capacity. I don't have to tell people. During non-peak hours, you see a lot of empty buses, and you see them because ridership tends to be kind of concentrated during high peak hours. I think there's an opportunity to partner with schools and advance our mission as an agency by providing students on school-sponsored trips with access to free transit. We're helping the students, obviously. This would be limited to non-peak hours so that our MTA customers are not negatively impacted. We wouldn't lose any – there wouldn't be any additional costs and services already running. We think this is a great way to introduce young people, obviously, to our system. Probably I see maybe an education component, how to use the system as part of that. And so I think it's a win-win. And I'd like to ask the CEO to comment on this motion as well.
Yes, sir, Mr. Chair. Happy to do so. I have received a few questions from members, and I kind of would like to outline my response to them. This would be by reservation only for a class to be accompanied by a teacher. The reservation would include an activity of sizing the size, the magnitude of the field trip to ensure that we had adequate capacity on the bus or train. We would not schedule additional service for this. It's during the midday when, as was just said, ridership is down. I would note by federal law, we cannot run a charter or a school bus, so this would be part of just our regularly scheduled revenue service. We will seek in the report back to the board in January to add a teaching component, perhaps 15 or 20 minutes for each class that goes on a field trip, that would outline the benefits of public transit, how to ride buses and trains, how to pay a fare, and how to be a good citizen in the future. I think there's some really wonderful examples of how this could be seen to work. Next year, the Expo Line will go right by the County Museum's Natural History and Science, and right now we have service to Alvera Street. That's a place where all children who grow up in the area should visit during their school years. So we will come back in January with, I think, a program which could be a very good win-win for the MTA and for the various schools. Thank you.
We have some comments here. I think this is Rhett Bautista. Rhett? Ruth.
Muy buenos días a todos. Mi nombre es Ruth Bautista. Estuve el día de ayer aquí también y
yes.
Vengo siguiendo.
Translator? I'm sorry. We do not have a translator? Are you going to translate for us? Okay.
Repito. De regreso, muy buenos días a todos. Mi nombre es Ruth Bautista. Soy padre voluntario del LUSD.
Good morning. Her name is Ruth Bautista, and she is a volunteer parent of LUSD.
Representamos niños estudiantes de todas las escuelas a nivel de primaria, secundaria y high school.
She represents students from elementary, middle school, and high school.
Nuestro deseo y participación en esto que está haciendo el señor Villarraigosa y por la moción que tiene, venimos nosotros a apoyar esto del transporte para los estudiantes.
She is here to support the motion of Mayor Villarraigosa for the transportation for students.
La situación es que ya debido al impacto económico que hemos tenido con las familias y se tiene bajos ingresos, la situación es que no todos los estudiantes tienen y ni cuentan con un pase para bus o dinero para que puedan ellos transportarse a las escuelas.
With the economy today, which is affecting a lot of low-income families, a lot of students don't even have a pass to get to school.
Y lo que le estamos pidiendo básicamente aquí es de que se nos apoye esta propuesta, esta moción que está teniendo aquí el señor Villarraigosa, porque nuestros estudiantes lo merecen. Ellos son el futuro del mañana. Los próximos líderes de esta nación, como pueden ser alcaldes, presidentes, sí, claro, presidentes, congresistas y todo lo que ustedes tengan en mente pensado, pero estamos aquí abogando por nuestros estudiantes. Y nuestros estudiantes es la prioridad y nuestros estudiantes van
ella
a seguir siendo.
Tiene que traducir. Okay.
The students here are the future, and the future of the whole nation. They're the future mayors, the future presidents, and they deserve it. And they've worked so hard, and she believes that these students deserve this notion to be passed.
Y quiero terminar con esto.
Tu tiempo es...
Ya nada más algo chiquito.
No, sí, entendimos, pero ya estamos...
Okay, gracias.
Muchas gracias.
Gracias.
Marshall Tuck.
Thank you, Mayor and board members. My name is Marshall Tuck. I'm the CEO of the Partnership for Los Angeles Schools, which was started by the mayor. We serve 20,000 students in some of the highest need schools in all of Los Angeles. Really encourage you on behalf of all of the partnership schools to pass this resolution. We know a couple things about student learning. When students believe that they have a future, when they can see the world outside the walls of their classroom, they get inspired and more excited to learn. And I think particularly for our high poverty students, they need to see what's in this city. And when they also know the relevance of learning math or learning English, if they can tie that relevance to a job, if they can tie that relevance to a future, then they're much more interested in learning and focusing. I talk to businesses every week in this city that want to help our students. We talk to the museums, the culture institutions. They're willing to offer job shadow programs, willing to offer programs for our young people at the museums. What we need is transportation to get them there. And that is really the only inhibitor right now that's preventing us from having kids observing job programs, kids going to museums on a regular and daily basis. So please pass this so we can get our kids to expand their learning opportunities. Thank you.
Thank you. Susan Parker.
Good morning. My name is Susan Parker, and I've been a teacher, administrator, and a coordinator at Monroe High School. Monroe High School currently serves 80% of students who are on free and reduced lunch. And as an educator, we know that it is paramount that these students be afforded the opportunity to access the community and to link their learning directly to the community. If any of you watched Superintendent Cortinas's show last night, you watched a show that highlighted linked learning to the community of Monroe's engineering and design students. Last year, I was fortunate to be the administrator in charge of engineering and design, and I can attest to the fact that these students were given enormous opportunities through the ability to work with local businesses, local colleges, by going to their sites, by performing internships at the businesses. This year, unfortunately, due to budget restrictions, we needed to scale down those opportunities afforded to our students. And so I'm here to advocate very passionately for the ability for our students to ride on public transportation, because it would greatly increase our ability to give them these vital opportunities and enhance their learning. Thank you.
Enrique Boulay.
with LAUSD. Is that Boulay? Thank you.
Good morning, Mayor Vigrosa, board members. My name is Enrique Boulay. I'm the Director of Transportation for Los Angeles Unified School District, here to convey Superintendent Cortines and our board members' support for this motion to allow transportation during a set period of time for field trips and other programs for our students. We have, as you know, over 850 schools in the Los Angeles Unified School District serving 650,000 students. Over the last number of years, the resources have been diminishing tremendously, and the dollars that have been used to transport students to various destinations throughout the greater Los Angeles area are dollars that are also earmarked for instructional purposes as well, such as books, and can be used for materials at schools. And so this motion will help free up valuable dollars that can be used in classrooms and at schools and to support their ability to get in and about the community. And so we wholeheartedly support this motion by Mr. Villagrosa.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Stephanie España.
Good morning. My name is Stephanie España, and I'm a senior at Santee Education Complex. Hearing this notion actually is really exciting. As a student, I am from a low-income family, and I work a part-time job. And it's very, very hard to pay these fees. Sometimes we have very little field trips, and now our field trips actually, we sometimes go on the weekends, and we have to pay for the bus fare ourselves. And many students actually have to miss out because they don't have this money. And the beauty of the metro system is that it connects all Southern California. It goes from the beaches to the museums and the libraries, and it's beautiful. And these opportunities are excellent for students. And as a student, I had to make a very hard decision in the beginning of this month, and that was between buying my monthly bus pass or buying my AP microeconomics workbook. And of course, I had to stick with my education. And these are the things that students have to go through, and we need the support to be able to have these field trips. Thank you, and I hope you guys support these notions.
What grade are you in?
I'm a senior.
You're a senior?
Yes.
Are you applying to college?
Yes, I am.
Where are you applying?
Right now, I'm in the process of UC applications and the Common App interviews. So.
Great.
Let me give you an idea. You should get the mayor to sign a letter of recommendation for you.
I will.
And while you're doing that, ask the supervisor who represents that area also.
I'll make sure. Thank you.
He's not kidding, so.
Yeah, I'm not kidding. Thank you. Nice to meet you. And thank you. You're a very articulate spokesperson for this important motion. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Can I have Marky and Gina Metzler come up together and maybe.
Do I use this microphone? Oh, here, that's fine. Good morning, everybody. I'm here on behalf of all the students, and
maybe you could tell us what school you're at.
I go to Topeka Drive Elementary. The reason why I'm here is because we need more money for bus fares and so on and so forth, because usually we only get to go on one field trip per year, and usually we have to walk. So I want to be able to extend our privilege for fun education. Like going to educational places.
Hi.
Like museums, aquariums, city halls, etc.
I love it.
Thank you. I'm sorry. It was all last minute.
No, it's all great. It's all
when
great.
She heard that I had been asked to come and speak, she said, oh, it's about kids. I have to be there. So here she is, but she's a little nervous because we have nothing prepared. You know, the bottom line is we as adults, if we remember back, way, way back, we used to be able to go on field trips all the time. I remember at least 3 or 4 per year. We'd go to the museum. We'd go, you know, to parks. We'd go everywhere. With the economy the way that it is, and obviously there's more people, there's, you know, it's harder and harder, especially for non-Title I schools who really don't have any money to go. These schools in particular, but really all, they end up not being able to go on field trips per year. Her school in particular, they literally, if they have the chance to go, they'll take a 3-mile walk, which is really harsh on little kindergartners, but that's the only way that they can go. We have parents that are able to get tickets to shows or tickets to educational places to go to, and we have to turn it down because we have no school bus, we have no transportation. So this really is crucial. They learn so much when they're able to see things firsthand versus just reading it in books or looking at it, you know, online or whatever. If they can be there, it's just, it makes a huge difference. So thank you for the motion, and hopefully
you.
It'll go through.
And thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hi, my name speaker.
Yes.
Yeah, my name is Trevor Jaquez, and I'm an educator at Santee Education Complex. It's always a hard act to follow when you have the students speak in front of you. But I'm here to ask a simple story. I take kids every year on several bus trips. I've always had to fork out with my own money, always. An example was when Obama got inaugurated, my filmmaking students went to interview students right down in downtown LA at LA Live. I forked out over $37.50, which you think, oh, it's only $40. You add that 3 times a year. I can no longer do that with the budget cuts in education. I can no longer do that as an educator. They've taken 10% off, and I need my students. I need the students of LA Unified. I need all the students of Los Angeles to have opportunities that we had as students. And you people can make the big difference for us. And I'm asking to reach to you, not with the economy thoughts, but think about the students, because you were all students with opportunities and somebody gave you. And the MTA can make a big difference for the life of our students. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions?
Motion second.
Moved second. Moved and seconded without objection. Such will be the order. You want to take the next one? Item number four.
No, we did item four. Item six is the next one.
Four? I think four. We did four. No, we didn't.
I'm sorry. Item four is the same.
Yes, we did do four.
We did it. Oh, I'm sorry.
We didn't do the program.
All right. Okay. Item number four.
Sorry, not sure why those are separate.
Good morning, again, members. Item number four is our combined federal and state legislative program. We talked about the challenges ahead of us in both Washington and Sacramento. Our program continues many of the same policies from our previous efforts, obviously addressing reauthorization and the issues in Congress, as well as the budget challenges in Sacramento. We also continue our strong support for continued funding for positive train control for the Metrolink system. Those are some of the highlights for both the programs, unless we have any questions.
Questions? Any questions? Hearing none, thank you very much. Moved. I'm sorry.
Second.
By Mr. Najarian, seconded by Mr. Yaroslavsky, without objection. Such will be the order. Item number six.
Item number six.
Yes.
Item number six.
Yeah.
Okay. Item six is the authorization of setting a student fare, K-12 student fare program. It is basically setting up a program that enables students to use a tap card in one of three ways. Currently, students have a $24 monthly pass, and that is done on a paper system. Converting it over to tap presents issues to schools in terms of not having the equipment to put the value on the pass. as well as there's a lot of distribution issues. And so what staff is recommending is that along with the ability to load that $24 monthly pass for students, that there's a default system set up on the tap card that either they can put dollars on there at any one of our outlets or ticket vending machines, and it would deduct a stored value for each trip. If they put money on there, if they did not have money on there and they presented it on board, they would have present a default fare of a dollar, and they would pay that as they board. So just by having this card would provide a discount. It would also provide them with the current discounts that they enjoy today, and it's a program that we would probably begin implementing in summer, so it's ready for the next fall year. And I'm happy to answer any questions.
Any questions?
I have a question, just so I'm clear on this. So we're calling this the stored value. What's the term that we're
actually? Yeah, it's a cash purse or it's stored value. And what it is that basically when you put you can put dollar value on a tap card, and these would be pre-programmed just for K-12 students. And so if they were to tap, it would deduct a dollar every time they boarded. They would still also be able to load on the fare product, or if there was no value on the card whatsoever, it would just tell the operator that the student owes that dollar when they board. So it's like a three-prong card that makes it so that students would get have a discount available to them as soon as they get the card.
Okay. And how soon are we ready to roll this out?
What I'm planning on doing is having it ready to go by the summer, and then so we would roll it out slowly, you know, during summer school, and then for more of a fall introduction. So we're trying to I guess June would be the start date, and we would go from there.
Okay. I mean, definitely before the school year.
The next school year, yes. Yeah. And we're in the process of converting a lot of the cards now, so it's just to expedite it. And this is a setting affair, so it does require a two-thirds vote by the board when it does come to the full board.
Okay. Thank you. Director Huizar?
Thank you very much. I'm stepping in for Director Katz, but I just wanted to commend this program, and I'm very thrilled about the motion that the mayor put in to provide free boarding for students in off-peak hours. I've been speaking to some of the schools and the tremendous cutbacks they've had in providing for field trips, et cetera. There really is very little now that's available to them. And if our rail lines are still functioning and moving and our buses are still functioning and moving, it doesn't cost us anymore to do it, and we provide a service for our students. I think that's going to be a great thing to do. So I commend this, and I think we should probably be thinking more creatively how we can continue to support our students. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Any other comments? Do we have any cards on the side? Malcolm Klugman. Oh, this is number... Yeah. Nothing on 6? Okay. Is there a motion then? Seconded by Director Yatsovsky. With no objections, the item is approved. Let's go to the next item. Item 7. Mr. Raymond, that's you again, I believe.
What this program is basically is the goal of it is to set up a regional seamless fare system. In terms of the UFS and TAP program from its inception, the goal is always to have for our customers be able to move seamlessly throughout the region using one fare mechanism. The objective is basically just to establish a timeline for implementation. The past focus has always been on the technology of the TAP program, and what I'm trying to do is move that forward in terms of more of a policy issue, because that seems to be where we have the biggest hurdles in terms of executing a seamless system. I would say that the key issue in dealing with all this are the transfers, the interagency transfer agreements. We currently have two systems in place. We have the Easy Pass, as well as we have Metro to Muni transfers and I think interagency transfers. And what I'm trying to do is basically set up a broad time frame dealing between 18 and 24 months in terms of trying to basically set milestones that we would work toward achieving. So Just to give you a background of where we are, and this was something in terms of the technology selection, which is pretty infamous or famous around here, of putting in the smart card system or the UFS or the TAP system. That was complete. That was done working with, I think, 9 initial partners. The system was procured. That's been complete. We established a regional customer service center. That's your ACS. Currently providing TAP support throughout the region. We have our maintenance agreement that goes both on the bus and the rail systems. We've done our central computer. We've had system acceptance throughout, and basically the system is fully operational. Last month, we also adopted our operating rules for the region, and in terms of capital installation, even though there's still some there's still 2 agencies yet to install the equipment. We're basically 95% in terms of the total capital outlay. My issue with and concerns with TAP has always been a return on investment, and so the path forward will help determine our return on investment. And again, what I'm proposing today is basically authorizing a timeline. What we've been doing over the last 2 years is collecting the regional revenues, and what one of the things we need to do to get the program moving forward is reconcile the accounts, all the revenues that have been collected under the regional system. And what we're proposing is we do that in the first quarter of 2011. One of the other areas that's in pretty popular demand is launching a stored value system. And this is just on the metro system. And again, it goes back to Director Najarian's question about putting money on a card and allowing that to be deducted as you use the services. This would also be the common platform for doing a regional system. Currently, what we have is a lot of different operators have different criteria for how they operate their local system and their local fare boxes. We're not trying to change that in any way, shape, or form, but what we are trying to do is establish a time frame for entering into a common platform. As part of that, we also in the second quarter, we would try to look for a routine settlement process. And in terms of the next steps forward would be, again, trying to get people to that standard platform, which is a stored value platform. Again, they would maintain their existing fare structure, but the anomalies that prevent interaction between agencies would be resolved. As part of this, the board in July approved smart card on paper. So this, we're looking at doing a fare media conversion by the third quarter of next year. So that's basically eliminating the paper passes that are out there. Another part of this is there were the original 9 operators. There's still other outliers in there. And in terms of people who may want to convert to the technology, so we would look at expanding the system. Last week, actually, the Access Services Board authorized moving a program forward that puts them on a TAP program. It's actually the TAP Visa program, so it's a dual-use card. So we look at other opportunities like that to expand the system. Then we would look at doing incremental regional fare system conversion. We would not force anybody to do it. It would be similar to what we did with the Easy Pass, where initially we had 12 people participating, and I think now it's up to 33 or 36 agencies participating. So we would incrementally convert people to that standard platform. And then the biggest thing, and again, this is targeted out for the second quarter of 2012, but would be the conversion of transfers. So the system would be, Metro would discontinue non-TAP transfers, and we would have, it would either be on a dual system or a TAP system to access the Metro system and the other participating agencies. So this is, again, the focus of this is basically to establish a timeline to start addressing the policy issues. I'm trying to move this forward probably quicker than people are comfortable with doing. So, we're open to obviously modifying dates, or if there's steps or milestones that we've missed, obviously open to modifying that. But the real goal is to move the program forward and to move closer to having a regional seamless fare system. And I'm happy to answer any questions. Thanks.
Are there any questions at this time? Okay, I have some speakers from the public wishing to address the committee. Malcolm Klugman, followed by Faramarz Nabavi.
I don't know if this will help explain it, but let's just do it this way. This is my debit card. I can use it anywhere. I could spend $10 in a restaurant or $500 in a big Best Buy, as long as I've put money into my checking account that this comes from. Washington, D.C. has been using a store money card since its inception in the late 70s. That's one way to go. The other way to go is the cards we have now. These tap cards are duration-based, daily, weekly, monthly. Now, if you do it by stored funds, I'm screwed. And so are most of the people who use the system, because instead of having it available on the weekends and night, you're taking money out of this card every time you use the system. And besides, you have 35-cent fares in Glendale and $1.50 here. This way reconciles it, but it's not at the help of customers.
Thank you. Farah Mars Nabavi.
Hi, my name is Farah Mars Nabavi. I'm with the Transit Coalition. And I wanted to speak on this item specifically because I actually have an easy pass, which is, as you know, a regional pass that transcends the TAP acceptance boundaries of some of the municipal operators. I think Metro needs to be careful. Although there is value in implementing a universal or regional fare system, there has been a lot of media attention with respect to some of the challenges the TAP program has faced. I'm not certain whether it makes sense for Metro to commit to more funds being allocated for this when, as yet, not all regional municipal operators have committed to participating in the TAP program. So I urge you to take another look at how this is going to be implemented. Thank you.
Thank you. I have no other speakers. Are there any comments from the committee members? I do have a follow-up motion once the published motion of number 7 is moved, seconded, and passed, just to let people know.
Yeah, so we're moving the motion?
Yes.
And that's going to supersede the board report? Or is it?
The
board report is actually asking for an implementation plan, and the report, the motion is asking for the implementation plan to be held and until they answer some more questions from the concerns of the munis.
Modify and supplement as directed the past board report.
Okay.
So is that a motion for?
Yeah, I'd like to move that motion. Yeah.
Seconded by
Director Yasovsky.
There's no objections. Item 7 is passed, and here's my motion. It is very much a corollary and underscores a lot of the comments Mr. Raymond made, but I think it's important we spell this out. The motion is co-authored by Director Du Bois, O'Connor, myself, and Mayor Villaraigosa. The intent of the report recommending adopting a schedule for the timely implementation of Regional Fare System Plan, RFSP, is to have the board adopt certain milestones for implementation. This board is committed to the implementation of an RFSP in order to successfully achieve the goal of a Los Angeles County seamless fare system that enables customers to conveniently transfer between transit services provided by different operators. Outstanding issues articulated in a September 23, 2010 letter from the Los Angeles County Municipal Operators Association must be addressed and resolved to the satisfaction of all parties. Additionally, LACMOA members are regional partners in the RFSP and as such should be consulted on the components and timing of the implementation schedule before this board adopts any timeline. Therefore, we instruct the CEO to return in February of 2011 with the results of the meetings with LACMOA, addressing and resolving the outstanding issues and concerns as detailed in the LACMOA matrix and any additional comments prior to bringing the RFSP back to the board. B, return with an implementation plan for the RFSP that has been vetted and discussed with the MTA's regional transit partners. So I think I can make that motion as a committee chair. Second it. Any objections? Okay, that item passes. Let's move to item 8.
Yeah. Item 8 is a... hold on a second.
Item 8 is basically the beginning of a discussion of looking at future fare structure alternatives. It's kind of a lengthy presentation, so I'm going to just go through it incredibly quickly. But basically what we're trying to do is look at the future fare structure and gain insight and a path forward of where we should be thinking as the system grows and expands. The objectives we basically want to do is look at our current fare structure, look at alternatives, and identify a path forward. The board has stated several interests with regard to fare structures, and what we want to do is address those interests, deal with the issues, and then look at some short and long-term strategies. In terms of the interests, the basic thing that comes up very constantly is distance-based fares. As we have an expanding rail system, we really want to look at that. Obviously, staff and operating concerns are fare recovery. We want to make sure that we incorporate that. We're talking about earlier having a seamless regional fare system. We want to move in that direction. We want to make sure we have reasonable operating costs. And again, we want to make sure that we have a very simple transfer policy that's conducive to customers using the system to their fullest advantage. The biggest issue we have today is that Metro has a very complex fare structure in place. It's based on trip, time, peaks, type of user, distance. And we do have distance-based fares, actually, which are in the form of zones. We use multiple different types of fare structure or fare types, paper, tap, token, cash. And everybody independently has different fare structures within the region. So it's a very complex system to the end user. In short, we have multiple modes, multiple technologies, multiple operators, and multiple fare structures. So the task before us is actually quite daunting. In terms of the issues, I kind of went over those things. But some of the things we have to look at too in addressing these issues are our distribution network, which is pretty extensive. But there's a lot of impacts and tentacles to whatever it is that we do. So, in looking forward, we need to take these things into consideration. I'm going to just keep moving forward here. Just to give you an idea of what our current fare structure looks like, basically about a quarter of our customers are on, use cash. They also use day passes, about 20% of them, 15% monthly, 10% weekly, and so on. And you can see that we actually devote a lot of resources to a very small part of our customer base in terms of a lot of these programs. And so program complexity is one of the things we also have to look at in the future. In terms of fare media use, you can see what customers are using right now. We have 53% on tap, like I said, 22% on cash, and so on. So again, we have a broad spectrum of what people are paying. We recently did surveys to look at where we were in terms of what people's preferences are, what customers' preferences are. And what I basically did here was identify some of the gaps in terms of riders and non-riders or potential users. Basically, non-riders would pay more for express service. Customers would ride more if they had day passes. The demand for day passes is actually pretty high on both areas. Non-riders see direct service much more valuable, and so on. So there's different variations based on whether you're a current rider or a non-rider considering the system. Looking at different alternatives, there's a trip-based system, time-based system, distance-based, which is a common theme, mode-based, which is types of service, and as well as user-based, and what we currently have today is a hybrid system. Give you an example of time-based. It's basically what we do today with time, with daily day passes, weekly passes, monthly, semester, and year. We have looked into doing things like a time-based system on a local level or a very confined level of like $2 for 2 hours of service. Our riders actually approve that prefer that by 57%, non-riders by 36. And time works for an integrated system as well too, because it facilitates transfers and helps with customer transfers and exchange issues. Distance-based fares, just to give you a quick background, we currently have 12 zones. Metro itself has 2 zones. It's used by only about 3% of our customers in terms of total volume, and it generates about $2.4 million a year. If we were to look at distance-based fares, the TAP application, again, we'd have to think about how we do this, but you'd probably do a max charge and then deduct based on how much they use. But it's something that's actually much more easily done on a rail system than it is on bus, just based on the technical configurations. An example of a distance-based fare is, let's say you had 6 segments, dollar per segment. Again, you would charge somebody the max charge as they board, which let's say would be $6. And if they got off, in 2 segments, it would only charge them for those segments. The other thing with this is it is a major departure from our fare structure, so it would take some
it would take some difficult decisions in terms of moving forward. Mode-based fares are basically taking what we currently offer, local, rapid, rail, express, regional, and assigning a fare value to them. And you would charge throughout the entire trip, so they would pay the same as they... So you might charge a little more for local or for rapid, or you would charge a premium for rail and so on and so on. But this is a system that's used throughout too. And the fare would be collected on the entire line. Some of our short-term strategies that we're bringing forward, we've mentioned stored value. Another thing too is looking at best fare. With the paper cards, we have we're able to do dual fare media, which could be either visually inspected or put on a smart card, a tap card. We're looking at alert gating, onboard distribution, incremental growth in the programs. And one of the things that's happening with our we talked about the K-12 program, but also with the Expo line, that there's huge opportunities in event marketing along our existing rail system. So in terms of fare structures, there's a lot of short-term strategies that we're pursuing. Long-term strategies, we discussed the regional fare system. Another concept is separating bus and rail fares. That's done in a lot of cities, but actually having one fare structure for each thing. Locking the gates is something we're looking at long term. And then the equity of the system, which is something that's brought up over time when you start comparing trips and costs. That's something that comes up as well too. So again, this was just the beginning of a discussion. I'm going to bring this back again in the operations committee in January. It's been requested. So again, as we move forward to seeking any kind of input and discussion on the subject. So, and that concludes my presentation.
Thank you. I have a speaker card from Malcolm Klugman. Pass. Any comments from the committee members? This is a receive and file. It will be coming back. Such a motion by Director Huizar, seconded by Director Yozovsky, with no objections. This item. Next item, please. That's number 9. 9 is withdrawn. 9 is off. Okay. Takes us to item 10.
Make it as brief as possible. We're really running late.
Good morning, board members. What you have in front of you basically is a report back on the motion that was passed by the board and ask us for 10 actions to consider. You have an attachment which highlights the items that we're handling and how we are going to be reporting to you in the near future. Also, you have item B, which is to use $90,000 from the Hollywood and Vine Joint Development in order to complete a bike room. If you have any questions, we're here to answer.
Okay, and these actions, our recommended actions, are consistent with our bicycle strategic plan, mm-hmm. correct? Are there any cards from the public on item 10? Okay. Is there any discussion? Motion. Seconded by Director Yozovsky. This item is passed. Item 11.
Same thing, Ruth, please. We're running late.
I will be very brief. I have a light report for this quarter. We did complete 15 audits or projects, 2 internal audits with minor issues. One's access security and the other's on the bus operations desectorization plan. The one thing I wanted to notify the board is that last month we talked about Measure R audit requirements and Prop A and C, and the CEO, executive management, decided to suspend sales tax payments to 3 cities. We just got this draft audit report for the city of Vernon, and I'm relieved to tell you that they got a clean report. They've complied in all material respects with the sales tax requirements, so I've sent an email up asking management to take action on the suspension for that city. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Any cards, Madam Clerk? None. Second by Director Yozovsky with no objections, such is the order. Item 12, please.
Good morning. I'm Karen Gorman from the Inspector General's Office, reporting on our activities for the quarter this morning. I'll keep my remarks brief since I'm suffering from a recent dental appointment still this morning. We were asked to conduct a audit of the legal department. We completed that in this last quarter. That audit involved reviewing the inventory for the last 5 years, the litigation cases, and to consider the efficacy and effectiveness of the policies and procedures, the cost controls that were being implemented concerning those cases. And the PowerPoint is for some reason not appearing on the screen. Oh, there we go. Cool. And the results of the audit were that we found a number of areas where counsel was satisfactory, including their rates and organization structure, and they were reviewing and approving all billing statements and had accurately reflected in the general ledger account the expenses we were incurring. We had made approximately 27 recommendations where we thought they could improve their cost controls and communication practices for the board. Those things included using a case management system and documenting their case evaluation plans or risk assessments of the cases in the file, their case budgets, and doing conflict checks that were reflected in the file, establishing thresholds for approval of expenses where the board would approve, and having policies and procedures where they would regularly report to the board on the activities of the cases they were handling. If you have any additional questions concerning that report, I'd be happy to have the outside auditor respond, or Mr. Shigetomi, who supervised the audit, also to respond, and possibly Mr. Safer might even wish to answer any questions that you have concerning his department's participation.
Okay, I have two cards from the public. Let's hear them first, and then I'll open it up to the committee. Stephen Mark Rosenberg, followed by Malcolm Klugman.
Good morning, everyone. You're on Honorable Commission. I'm a stakeholder and a rider of the MTA bus. I'm not a gadfly here. An accident occurred July 13th, 2007. I can tell you right away, this has been bus drivers covering for bus drivers. There was no police report done. A claim was made by myself. Your litigation team from outside wanted to get my college transcripts from 1985 from CSUN. That had nothing to do with the accident. There were other people injured on that bus. Here's a courtesy card. Car hit bus. Many people are hurt and kids are crying. Two people were taken away by ambulance. This is the safety report. Totally blank except for the driver's one sentence at the bottom. DWP paid for me to have a safety brief from USC. You should not just receive and follow this. You need more follow-up. Look under the hood on each one of these cases. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. Malcolm Klugman.
There's an added factor to this, which is last year, a shortfall of $24 million was the reason that every member of the Los Angeles County had to pay a higher fare. This problem is more than $24 million, and the gating problem is more than $24 million. So you have an added burden to get this corrected, get the tap gates corrected too. There's a sentence in here that's unbelievable. Areas needing improvement, case numbers should be assigned to all cases to ensure that all costs are recorded. What are you doing, putting this stuff in shoe boxes or what? You have case numbers for this stuff that you're so poorly have taken care of, which is costing the public and a lot of money in fare.
Thank you. I have no other cards from the public. Any comments from the... Would you like to say something? Thank you.
Good morning, everyone. Speaking on behalf of this particular issue, it's really important. I hope that the recommendations will be taken very seriously with regard to the county council on this issue, because the cost, every cost that we spend on litigation takes away from services to the community, and it's become a really important issue across the board for all of us in every aspect of claims management and litigation costs that we've had to face. But I know it's near and dear to Mayor Villaraigosa and to Supervisor or Director, really, Thomas on this issue, but to all of us on the board, that we take each cost that we have seriously. And the updates to the board, I think, are very important. I know recently we've been getting periodic updates on what's going on with litigation, and I think that to those carry on, at least it gives the board a little bit more idea of what things they should be aware of and when we should probably meet in order to determine next steps, because I think that's part of it as well. And though I'm not an attorney and I don't pretend to understand all the legal aspects, there are many people on the board who are and who could provide their expertise and advice on issues and then eventually come to some terms that we march forward together as one unit. And I think that that would be very helpful in the long run, and I know that's the desire of the mayor with regard to how we move forward on the board in the future. So thank you very much for your work on this.
Thank you. Good points, Director Robinson. Would you like to move the item?
Yes.
Yes, and item. Seconded by Director Yovzovsky. With no objection, this item is approved. Items 13 and 14, in the interest of time, we are going to be removing from the agenda and placing them on board boxes for the rest of the board. These are report items exclusively. Items in 13 will be off. Item 15, I believe, is our last item.
Yeah, item 15 is just a TAP update. Basically, everything's moving forward. We've had enough discussion on it from the regional issues today. But the one thing I do want to point out is the alert lighting system on the gates is being installed. I think we're at 4 stations now, and we're going to continue installation of that. We have not experienced any customer issues in doing that, and we're in the process of developing enforcement models to monitor that. So that is moving forward, and the program is moving forward. And
can I just comment on that,
Mr. Yes, Chair? Mr. Leahy.
We've gotten a certain level of complaining about not locking the gates. Locking the gates would require staffing the stations. By using a lighting system, it will light up when the passenger does not tap, does not have TAP payment card. That will then alert an enforcement officer that individual has not paid with the TAP system. That will allow them to act that individual and either seek proof of fair payment or issue a citation. We can do this without the overhead implied by locked gates, so I think we're on a very good path.
Okay. I did have a question on that, and that, anyway, I guess I do recall we were going to have the lighting system, so if you pass through, the gate will not be the physical barrier, but a light will indicate that you paid, that you passed without a fare, and then low staffing levels would be required too.
Right. So then an officer will see the light flash, and they'll know to intervene with that individual.
Okay. I do have a card from Faramarz Nabavi.
In the interest of time, I'll pass.
Thank you. Any questions?
I just have one question. Has the meeting been set up with the munis on the TAP program with regard to the letter that they sent to you on some of the issues?
We're still trying to set that up. We've actually had it scheduled twice before, and it's fallen through. And Metro staff has responded or has printed a response and distributed that out. And I think we're trying to set up the meeting for the second week of December.
Okay, great. But I think that's going to be real important as we march through to make sure that we can at least put those issues to bed so we can kind of move to the next level. I know it's been stuck there for a little while, so I was glad that the munis at least consolidated their concerns made them real clear to everyone, made them clear to you, and I know there have been discussions going back and forth, but hopefully that meeting can help resolve, and then hopefully a written response that would codify what the agreements are so that we can kind of move this forward, because otherwise I just feel it's just going to get stuck forever.
It'll
be long
agree.
After my time, but I hope for it to be resolved sometime, because I'll still be going somewhere where it still counts and makes a big difference.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, we are. We will do that.
Mr. Raymond, the closed circuit TVs, what's the situation and the status on those? Are we installing those at all the gates or?
The closed circuit TVs, that is actually funded through a state grant, so we are moving forward with securing the cameras. We are working with security to come up with a monitoring model. They have not been installed yet, and we haven't procured them yet, but the plan is to do so. So we are moving forward with it, but it hasn't happened yet.
Okay. So is it our intention then to never lock the gates, to always have this flashing light system operational? Or
in my opinion, if it works, then we have a success on our hands. The cost of installing gate or locking the gates, pardon me, is in multi-millions of dollars per year. And I think if this allows us to achieve our objective of being able to ensure a higher level of fare payment, that's our objective achieved, so then why lock them?
Okay. Thank you. Any other comments on this item? Is there a motion? Seconded by Director Robinson. With no objection, this item is approved. That concludes our business for the EMAC. Is there a motion to adjourn? We are adjourned.